Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
Good morning, everyone. Rich Casanova here live in Buckhead. Beautiful city, beautiful day here in Atlanta. And we're excited. We have a power-packed studio this morning with some intriguing, interesting guests. If they're not, then we'll get some extra coffee to make them a little more interesting. So I'm excited to be here this morning. We're just underway with our Buckhead studio, and we've got some great people. And first of all, I introduce guest co-host this morning, Jim. And Jim is I've known Jim actually for a while, and Jim Beach is famous, probably most famous for your school for startups, which I actually attended about a year or so ago. It's very intriguing. And another claim to fame, as I know it, Jim, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you published your first book through McGraw-Hill, instead of sending out hundreds and hundreds of offers, you got the first reception from McGraw-Hill.
We sent out one letter, and within 1 week, we had a signed contract with a major publisher. That never happens.
Absolutely. People are in the studio are pretty stunned or whatever. Yeah, that is definitely not the rule, the exception. And the School for Startups is a series of events. But beyond that, at the age of 25, I think another claim to fame, I remember you talking about at the event, is from you founded the American Computer Experience from 93 to 2000. You grew the company at age 25. This is amazing. With no capital infusion to $12 million in annual revenue, with over 60 permanent and 700 temporary employees operating in 39 states and 172 countries, or no, three. But
let's go with 172 right, yeah. Countries. Sounds better.
Yeah, yeah. But at age 25, wow, and you're what, 27, 28 now? Or
something like that. Well, I didn't know any better. You know, I didn't know that you could actually go get money and use that to grow a business. No one had ever told me that. So I don't think I'd ever heard the word entrepreneur for 3 or 4 years after that. So
yeah,
I had the incredible fortune of not knowing how difficult what we were doing was. So it made it easy.
And I'll go ahead and brag on you a little bit more. You were also selected as one of the 40 under 40 most influential citizens by Georgia Trend Magazine, appeared on NPR, NBC, CNN, and now Buckhead Business Radio X. So you've arrived, man. Dude, you are here.
I feel like it. Yes, I've come full circle now.
Full circle. Nice. All right. So, there's lots of other to talk about. We're going to post your entire profile about your experience in Utah, from Utah, Hawaii, Dubai. We have some other people here, I think, doing business, internationally and globally as well. But, we'll post this entire profile and you're, on our website as well. But let's jump into a couple of questions here real quick. So, one of the first things we were talking about earlier is this idea of risk. And you mentioned at age 25, you didn't know any better, right? But as we get older, I think we're a little bit more reluctant to jump and take action. So what's this idea about your thoughts or belief on the idea of risk?
Well, thanks a lot for having me. I enjoy being here. Thanks a lot. I'm not a fan of risk. You know, in my 20s, I was interested in bungee jumping and parachuting and stuff like that. But now that I have three kids and mortgages and car payments and stuff like that, I have zero desire for any risk in my life, particularly in business. You know, I got the letter one day, Rich, that said you have 30 days to move out of your house because we are seizing it and all of the possessions in it. Please leave your cars in the driveway. And you don't sleep very well after that has happened. You know, you have to go in and tell your wife, by the way, we're moving out because we've gotten kicked out of our own house because of my business ventures. And so risk is something that I will do anything to avoid now. When I'm working with entrepreneurs, I say, let's start with $500 or $5,000 and not a penny more. If you can't afford to lose it, don't invest it. And so I don't believe in risk, and I don't think that you need to take risk to start a business. We try to show people how to use low-risk approaches so that they don't have to take any risk at all.
Now, is the flip side of risk creativity? I mean, how do you – what's the balance there?
No, it's not. I'm very strange. I also don't believe in creativity. I think creativity.
Eventually, we're going to find out what you do believe in. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, it'll be a hard thing. I don't think that entrepreneurs need to be creative either. There are too many businesses that you can simply buy a book to and implement that business on your own. So, for example, a year ago, I challenged my wife to start a business. and I gave her a book that I bought for $35. That was her Christmas present. I'm a big giver. And, she now 13 months later has started a business. She spent $135 to buy her business license. So that's sunk cost. She then spent $500 on inventory, which she sold and doubled her money. She made $60,000 in the first year. That's a zero risk business. She risked $135, zero creativity. I gave her a book and said, copy this, right? And I'll go ahead and finish it up. We're not passionate about the business either. So creativity has got nothing to do with it. Passion's got nothing to do with it. The only thing that we care about for entrepreneurs is if you're making a bunch of money or not.
All right. This man, you don't mince words, or there's no, it doesn't seem to be a lot of gray area there, but on the idea of passion, I'm having a little bit of flashback to the School for Startups event that I attended. And that was a bit of a aha moment, your thoughts on passion. And I think a lot of business people, entrepreneurs, we feel like, we eat, sleep and drink and love our business, right? But
I eat, drink, and sleep and love the benefits of my business. Yeah. I get to wake up when I want to. I have a 3-second commute, which beats the heck out of a 2-hour commute. I go to ballet at 2 with my daughter if I want, and soccer at 3 if I want, and work all night if I want. I am passionate about the lifestyle, the freedom, the money, and I could care less what I'm selling as long as it's mostly moral and slightly legal. I really just don't care. You know, my wife sells a bunch of stuff through her business that we would never use in our house, products that we don't use. Yeah. We make more money off of those because if you sell a product that you actually like, you tend to steal some of it and you take it and put it in your house. But I'm very content. I'm happy being passionate about the process, the freedom, and I'll sell almost anything if I can make money from it.
That's an interesting perspective. And finally, this idea of the corridor principle, enlighten us on that.
Well, you know, as a beginning entrepreneur, you're like, well, I have no ideas. I can't understand how to go about this. Think of yourself at the beginning of a very long hallway, and you're looking down this hallway, and there are rooms to the right and to the left, but you cannot see into those rooms because of your angle. As you start walking down this pathway, this corridor, and let's call it the journey of being an entrepreneur, all of a sudden your angle changes and you can clearly see into the rooms and to the right and left, and in those rooms are new opportunities. So you may think that, oh, it's so hard to find an idea. Well, if you talk to an entrepreneur, you will constantly hear, I am inundated with new business ideas. The hard part is selecting which one of the 100 opportunities I have. And so the idea is, get started down this path of entrepreneurship and you will be inundated with new cool business opportunities left and right.
Well said. And, speaking of new opportunities, we've known each other for a while, but this is a new business venture for us here in Buckhead with Business Radio X. But you're also in the radio business as well. I tuned in the other night at 6 p.m., right? How many nights a week do you do that?
I'm on 6 days a week.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, so we do 6 hours of fresh content a week on 2 different shows. We have one show on entrepreneurship, and then our weekend show is about restaurants.
Okay.
It's called Restaurant Owner Radio. So we interview the CEOs of every restaurant you've ever heard of, the famous chefs. Last week, we interviewed the guy who's taking Versace's house down in Miami,
right,
and turning it into a new hotel and restaurant, things like that.
So you get some perks. Do you get some tickets to some of these restaurants you can share with our audience here?
I have gotten some pretty good perks.
That's something you're passionate about, yeah.
Yeah. I was really fortunate. I got to be the judge for the grilled cheese and soup competition at the last Food Expo. So that was a big honor.
Oh yeah, big time. Now you're getting us hungry here or whatever. Yeah. So, tell our listeners, how they would find you on the radio and how they might get in touch with you for more information about, what's going on with in your world, Jim.
Well, thank you. Everything is School for Startups. Okay. So School for Startups is the book. School for Startups Radio is the radio show. And I am impossible to miss there. So my contact information is all over those websites.
And on LinkedIn as well.
Of course.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, thanks again for being here, and appreciate your insight. It's always interesting to reconnect with Jim Beach. I think a lot of your ideas and your what you've done up to this point, and this is more around the corner. So we have some guests I want to introduce now in the studio, and they're joining us here from We have a contest this morning from the people that came the furthest and the closest to the studio. And first up, these guys, met, actually, they're in the same building here with us, a few doors down the hall, right? So yep. You win the contest already. There you go. Help yourself to additional snacks or some mints there, whatever. Yeah, on us. Yeah. So, our next guest are, with the same company. Michael Pink is the founder of,
Construct Solutions.
Construct Solutions. I
some
should have done that.
Some people call it Construct Solutions. Right, yeah. Some people call it Constructs.
All right. I'm gonna call it what you call it, right?
All right.
And, so you've worked in the construction industry, your entire career.
Yeah.
And, graduated Georgia Tech with a BS in industrial engineering, received master's in business administration from New York University. How long were you in New York?
I was up in New York for about 9 years. I went right after college. I think I graduated 2001. Went to New York, lived in the city, which was a good time.
Nice, nice. And you've worked for some of the most prestigious consulting firms like KPMG, Deloitte, and FTI?
Yeah.
All right. And you brought in the studio, your backup person here as well, Billy Upchurch. You've been in the construction consultant, regularly providing clients with data analysis, management services. You've worked on projects on a global scale.
Yep.
Quite a bit of background and experience. Also, from, College of Architecture from, Georgia Institute.
Georgia Tech, yep.
Georgia Tech. Yep. All right. So, welcome to the show, guys. And, let's jump right into it on, what's on the mind here. First of all, Mike, you've created we were having a chat in your office a couple of weeks ago and I got the gist of it. Then it, as a friend says, the sponge is full at a certain point. It went a little bit over my head, but I'm pretty excited about what you're creating is. I understand it's new software. That could actually eliminate your own job, which is kind of interesting. Tell us about that.
Sure. Like I said, when I graduated from Georgia Tech, moved up to New York, and I worked in the consulting industry, particularly supporting people in commercial construction. And through my years, I've been doing various analyses and project support that support risk management, processes and controls around construction, as well as dispute resolution, and I've been doing that for 15 years, but one of the things that I noticed over those 15 years was the work that we did, people were paying a lot of money for, and it was the same process every single time. What we were doing was capturing data and telling them what it means. What we've decided to do is come up with a software solution that does essentially that. It gives people in construction the ability to capture their own data, and the program tells them what it means instead of having to hire a consultant to come in at the end of the day, clean up a big mess and tell them what all their data means and who owes who what. We actually give them a process and a tool that enforces data collection and then in turn converts it into project-related metrics that help them make decisions along the way that they wouldn't normally be privy to because they're not people in commercial construction. Don't do the best job of collecting and studying data. Right. So that's what we're doing. We're giving them the ability to do that. In real time, all the time, and on pretty large scale on these major projects. So what we're hoping to do is eliminate the need for people to hire people like me or Billy on their jobs at the end of the day.
Don't tell Billy this though, whatever. I don't know if he knows this yet or not. So this, this platform, how is this a better way of doing business?
What we've found in the construction industry is people are unorganized. So for instance, the biggest question that we have to find out when we do our job is, what happened? What was the story of the project? So you look at, you know, we look out the window here, we see all these nice buildings, but what happened? How did you get to the point of completion? Right now we're working on a project. We're also doing consulting work on top of the software. I'm going through stacks of daily reports, daily construction reports, correct? And every trade is on that report. Not organized well. So it's my job to go through the report, sort through it, figure out what happened and reproduce it in a more telling manner. What our platform will allow the user to do is organize that in real time on the fly and not have to have us come in the back end and figure everything out.
And then I'm guessing they can share that then with all the other entities involved in the project.
That's correct. It's a web-based platform. Yeah. So every user on a construction project, every, you know, mechanical guy, the interior guy, the concrete guy, they can all see what's happening in real time.
And that's another very good point. One of the biggest challenges in construction is transparency. And it's the reason that it's such a highly dispute-heavy industry, and disputes kill everybody.
If they can avoid just a small percentage of the litigation, right? I mean, that's
you almost get you know, a too many cooks in the kitchen type scenario sometimes.
Right. Yeah, and none of these cooks know what they're cooking
unless they're making cheese sandwiches or what was that? Yeah. That's pretty easy. Yeah, I don't know if you need a software program for that. So, what type of construction industry companies would benefit?
Well, right now, I think the people who will benefit most are the people doing the work. We are actively marketing out to the subcontractors, and we're actively marketing to construction managers, the people who are actually doing the work, because those are the ones that have the most to lose. The way construction works, there's an owner getting something built, and then there's people building it. At the end of the day, when you have a contract signed for a certain amount of money and you are unable to create what you're trying to build for that amount of money, there's going to become an argument. And generally speaking, the person holding the money, the owner, usually prevails, and the construction managers have to eat some of their margins. And in proving reasons for disruption or delay or budget overruns is very tough due to the lack of transparency and the fact that it's an archaic industry. Like Billy said, he's sifting through paper copies of dailies to figure out the story. And at the end of the day, I think the contractors suffer the most. So we would recommend right now contractors use this to better manage their own projects and even owners at the end of the day, if they want to at least know what's going on, they should be utilizing it as well. But collectively, as a group, everybody should be working together, collaborating and using the same type of thing to manage the project and keep that strong relationship.
Yeah, it benefits both parties.
Mike, this is Jim. I have a question about the ROI on this. Is this an expensive thing to invest in? And if we were to buy this, will it ultimately save us money?
Are you talking about as invest in as a client?
Sure.
Yeah, our goal here is to be very cost effective. The return on investment is huge. You know, people hire consultants. People hire us anyway, and we charge somewhere around $200 an hour. Sometimes more. When I was working at Deloitte, they were hiring us for $400 an hour, and we were putting staff of five people on for an entire year to go through an analysis. And we're talking millions of dollars on major projects. But this is something that would cost a subcontractor somewhere of $1,000 a month, and they can guarantee that they have all the information they need, not only after the project's done, but during it to make better decisions along the way. So I think the value proposition is huge.
Right. And part of the problem is the construction industry is based on a competitive bidding process. So when you're trying to make your bid on a job as low as possible, you're not going to include things in there for like data management or as-built tracking. As-built is a term we used for telling the story of the job. So what we're trying to produce is a cheap alternative for that, so it can be included in every project.
I tend to call it an inexpensive alternative.
Affordable, yeah.
That's a better word.
Reasonable, yeah.
It's not a cheap product.
Well, yeah.
Well, how are sales going so far? How has the marketplace received the product?
Well, right now the marketplace loves the product, but we're actually about a month out from launching it. We have a few test clients that have used it. We've actually used this process in our own client base right now, but right now we're really kind of tweaking it so that we have the security that we want. We have all the bugs that were in there out. We want it working very well. And our set to launch date is March 31st.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you. We're excited.
So I think that's what you call pre-revenue in the business, right? That's the new buzzword or whatever.
Right.
It sounds better, right?
Yeah.
For some reason. Well, thanks, guys, for being here this morning. And so tell our listeners, how would they get – that's the best way to get in touch with y'all and to reach you.
Oh, you could just go to our website. It's www.constructsolutions.com, and that's constructsolutions.com.
Or they can come by the studio, and I'll send them a few doors down.
You can find Business Radio X. You can find us.
Exactly. Office number three.
Nice.
And our phone number is 404-329-3000.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here, guys. We really appreciate it. And I hope you'll stick around for our other guests here as well.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, Jim, who's our next lineup here? Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to introduce our next guest. His name is Chuck Harris, and he is the founding partner of a company called Harris Medical Associates. They do all sorts of things. They provide locum tenens staffing for hospitals and medical groups. They have a medical search company. They have a medical hospital division, and they also have a great website called physiciansemployment.org. Chuck has been in the industry for over 30 years, and Inc. magazine has ranked him as one of the fastest growing privately held companies in the United States. Congratulations for that. And probably most importantly, he's one of the founding members of the National Council of Medicine, which is over at Emory and is dedicated to leukemia research. He founded the Charles Harris Run in honor of his father, who passed a little bit early due to leukemia. Chuck, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Very well. Appreciate it.
Is now a good time, bad time? You hear all of the things going on with the Affordable Care Act. Is now a bad time or a good time to be a doctor in America?
I think now is actually a good time to be in America. Certainly with the Affordable Care Act, there's going to be a lot of noise, if you will. Essentially, I think it's going to blow up at some point, just to be totally direct about that. In theory, it sounds good to have a people going to physicians or as a primary care physician, as opposed to being into the emergency rooms and areas like that, where it tends to overstaff emergency medical rooms that are very costly and expensive. So it sounds good, at least in theory. Let's do preventive care versus reactive care, right? And essentially, it's going to rest on the backs economically of 18 to 34-year-olds who are not signing up. So with that in mind, a one-payer system, single-payer system, I just don't think it's going to work. I don't think the economic base is there to support it. Nobody's signing up for it. But as far as the physicians themselves are concerned, I've been at this for 30-plus years, and you know, there was another run at one point back years ago on a universal plan or single-payer health care system, and it didn't work. Let's face it, that's 19% of our gross domestic product health care. So it's going to be around. As far as physicians, they figure out a way to work around whatever obstacles that they may have and challenges.
The doctors that you talk to, are they interested in a single-payer system, or does that scare them to death?
No, they just essentially don't like it. And single payer, where you're trying to force and corral people into one system, it's just not advantageous to anybody, and they don't like it.
Okay. You know, I go to the doctor all the time, unfortunately, but I've never heard this term locum tenens. What is that, and what kind of doctor is a locum tenens? Is it a crazy man? It sounds crazy to me.
Sounds something about, yeah, loco or something.
Right, yeah, Spanish word for crazy doctor.
Yeah, actually, it's a Latin term, meaning to hold the place of or to stand in the place of. Okay?
So it's a temporary job.
It's a temporary job, that's okay. Correct. It started back in the early 70s in a rural area in Utah where a physician, and even to this date, a lot of really rural, remote areas cannot find physicians on a permanent basis. So a physician went in and stood in on a temporary basis, and that got the whole process started in locum tenens.
Would a doctor like this sort of situation?
Absolutely, especially those that are coming out of training, for instance. They've got to get experience somewhere, right? So as a result, they've got all this debt to the tune of $150,000 to $200,000 coming out. So they can go in and work under the tutelage or mentor, if you will, of a practice or in a hospital situation whereby they can at least get some experience on a temporary basis. And by temporary, of course, some of these situations work into a long-term scenario. They get in, they drive before they buy, they like it, and they decide to go ahead and go permanent. So it's not necessarily locums is the only thing that they'll do. They may go permanent if they like that opportunity.
And what about from the other side? Would a medical group or a hospital like this idea, or for them is it a stopgap only?
It is a stopgap measure. For instance, they may have a physician that wants to do some continuing medical education or go on maternity leave or a sabbatical, that type thing. So they'll bring in a locum tenens physician just to provide the continuity of care that is needed in the absence of that particular physician in that stopgap scenario.
And how big a problem is the lack of doctors in the more remote areas of the United States? You mentioned Utah. Is that a huge problem for America?
Well, it
is it getting better or worse?
You know, essentially, it's getting, I think, a little bit better. I mean, in terms of being able to get to places, if you will, even some of the more remote rural areas, right, with the transportation infrastructure the way it is nowadays, folks can get there a little bit easier. But I think basically you're looking at 17% of the population base lives in rural to semi-rural areas. And there's about the corresponding number of physicians that would work in those particular areas. So basically, a physician going in on a temporary or a locum-type basis for a short term, that's all they're going to do for a period of time and then be out, so to speak.
Now, is this with commercial, normal, for-profit hospitals and the VA, Medicare, Medicaid hospitals, both types?
Well, essentially, our greatest base is on the commercial side, which would be for-profit, private hospitals, medical groups, clinics, community-based centers, things like that. Now, we do have a contract through the federal government, through the General Accounting Office. We're on the federal supply schedule, whereby we can essentially place physicians in VA facilities, Department of Defense facilities, and Indian Health Service facilities.
All right. My father, 76, a retired pathologist. I'm going to give him your telephone number and see if you can get some work for him, because we need to get him out of the house.
Okay.
He's just around too much.
Anything Jim can do, yeah.
Yeah, I got to get Dad a job.
Nice,
so
yeah.
He'll be calling you soon.
Yeah, I hope Dad's listening. So speaking of terms, here's another one, hospitalist.
Hospitalist, yes.
Yeah, I'm hoping you know the definition of that.
Yeah, well, hospitalist essentially was – It's new, and it's the fastest growing, especially ever in the history of healthcare. Hospitalists have taken the place of primary care physicians having to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go take call when a particular patient shows up at the hospital. Hospitalists are based at the hospital. They will actually take the patient coming into the emergency room, and will do the admit and the rounding on that patient and then turn it back over to the primary care physician. The benefit to the primary care physician is, again, they won't have to get up at, really weird hours of the night, that kind of thing. And two, they make most of their money, if you will, being in an office-based setting, not traveling back and forth to the hospital to round on patients. So these hospitalists, they're 90% of them are board-certified internal medicine physicians who can do the diagnostics and treatment, if you will, of most medical problems, and in turn work in conjunction with the emergency room physicians in coming up with protocols and plans on how to treat these patients. Emergency room physicians themselves cannot admit patients. Hospitalists can. They have admitting privileges. So,
is that an advantage, or what are other advantages for the hospital?
Well, for the hospital, certainly you're looking at lesser lengths of stay. In terms of beds, you don't want them really filled up. I mean, it's more costly to the healthcare system, more of a burden when that bed's filled up.
Sure.
And the hospital itself is able to, the morbidity rates are supposedly down too. From what we've heard, one of our hospital clients just south of the city here said that the morbidity is down because they can treat patients and get them in, triage them a lot quicker and better. A lot of these guys are trained to do very intensive procedures, all the way from thoracentesis to lumbar punctures, you name it. So they're right there to be able to do everything they've got to right there on the spot. But they always, once they admit the physician, they round on them, they turn them back over to the primary care physician in the community. So everybody wins in that situation.
Now, about within the last year, you began a psychiatry division.
We did.
What was the inspiration or the thought behind that?
Well, thank you. Essentially, it is a very high demand area, psychiatry. And basically, an individual came along who works with our company now that was 10 years clinical, and she's also done 10 years in this particular arena of psychiatry staffing. And she had the unfortunate situation of, within the mental health care system, of having a brother, essentially, that and I'll just go ahead and say committed suicide back a number of months ago. Her intent and her heart and her desire and her mission is to really serve this particular area. So one thing I'd like to even just read a quote here from her, because I think it's something that really epitomizes what this is about. Because every human deserves access to timely assistance for mental health crisis, every person with mental health issues deserve to be taken seriously. Because we are wholeheartedly part of the movement to make sure people suffering from mental illness have a voice through our providers and advocates. We also are invested in making sure that there are staff beds and facilities nationwide so that the ones that need crisis stabilization or crisis intervention have a place to go and be cared for. Our country averages 38,000 suicides each year. One is too many. I am the voice of the 38,000. You're the voice of the 38,000. We're the voice of the families touched by suicide or routine mental illness. somehow we need to make people listen and change and give the sufferers and the caregivers hope. When people stop dreaming and stop hoping, what do they have to live for? At that point, the alternative doesn't look so bad. Timely intervention is key. Staff and psychiatry is what we do, but the motivation for doing so is the consuming passion to send out providers and fill open positions because we care first and foremost. This truly is, they're the people, I think they're the forgotten folks out there. You know, it's one thing to treat a physical illness, the mental illness side of things. We tend to almost push those folks off to the side. And so it's more than just going out and generating another business. It's really a mission and a passion that we're doing in that particular area.
Well, this idea of giving people, you know, some funding or money or some material things, but if they don't have hope, I mean, you can't, there's not a whole lot you can do from there. And it just kind of goes south without that. So, I mean, if, whatever you can, way you can participate and impact people on that level is powerful to me. So finally, what about some insight into, you have a job board for the physicianemployment.org?
We do.
Share with our listeners some insight about that or,
Physicianemployment.org, we started that about 4 years ago. And essentially, to date, we've got over 30,000 physician providers, over 30,000 job openings or positions listed there from agencies, hospitals, medical clinics all over the country. And essentially, the hospitals, the medical clinics can go there and can post their needs as to what they're looking for, what type of specialty or whatnot. And, of course, the physicians can go there, or the mid-levels, in this case, physician assistants and nurse practitioners as well, can, too, go to that particular site and be looking for various jobs and positions that they might be wanting to find.
30,000, that's a lot. Is that is it concentrated in any part of the country?
It's worldwide. It's essentially, it's all over the United States. And we're so, yeah, basically, just go there, sign up, and that's a it's a great place to find our next job.
Yeah, absolutely. I would join or sign up for that, but I don't think I have any experience. I don't think anybody wants me showing up. But, so Chuck, thanks for being here once again. And, beyond that, what about, best way for our listeners to get in touch with you through the site there or,
certainly our website, www.harrismedical.com or, hey, you know, we're available, accessible. That's sort of our mantra, right? 770-497-9685 and call us locally or on our 800 number at 980-2385.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate your time and hope you stick around for our remaining guest here as well. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. And we have our next guest up is I've met Reed networking actually as well, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But Reed is the Vice President Relationship Manager for Private Bank of Buckhead, experienced professional in that industry for a number of years. And interesting, you probably were keying on in some of the other conversation with these guys, right? I don't know if they know, but you have an extensive background, residential, commercial, energy contractor. You're actually a licensed general contractor. So I see some business or some exchange of some networking happening here this morning on that topic. And one of your quotes in your bio here is you're committed to the client, providing them with great service and understand, have empathy for borrowers and depositors, right? Which is both ends of your business. Graduate of Wake Forest University. And also interesting with the doctor here in the house, your wife, Lauren, is a pharmacist with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So we're trying to tie into everybody here in the studio. Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, on Private Bank of Buckhead, we met while networking, and I was impressed with, your persona and your advantages with the bank. And it was a pretty quick and easy decision. Opened our bank here in Buckhead with the Private Bank of Buckhead for Business Radio X. So appreciate the business and what you all do. I was very impressed. So this idea, the name of Private Bank of Buckhead, it sounds exclusive, and which I thought it was, but I don't, you're going to inform me, but can anybody bank with you guys? And what does private, signify about the bank, I guess?
Private banking is generally a term used and held in reserve for those with high net worths. Specifically, in larger banks, they say you can be in private banking if you have $5 million in liquid assets or $10 million in liquid assets, depending on the bank. Well, with our bank, we treat everybody with that private banking service. It doesn't matter if you have $100 in a checking account or you know, the $5 million. But, you know, we give each client the same high level of service that anybody can get at a private bank at a larger institution. So, you know, the private bank, it sounds a little tricky, but really it's related to the level of service that we provide.
That was my perception, whatever, because I guess we fall somewhere between that $100 and $5 million or whatever, right? But I keyed in on the private, just giving it, you know, that personal attention or whatever, right? And so that's what I was kind of drawn to. Now, in December, just this December, you guys celebrated your 7th anniversary. Tell us about, what's the significance of that anniversary?
Yeah, that's actually a very large milestone in the banking business, because after 7 years, the regulators no longer consider you a new bank. So along with that, it allows us some flexibility in our business plan. And it really signifies the strength that the bank has had over the past 7 years. You know, those were some very, very difficult years for a lot of banks.
Absolutely.
And in the timing of the formation of Private Bank of Buckhead was
genius.
It really ended up being a great timing, because during that time frame, a lot of banks were trying to recover from the real estate that they had lent on, and they were upside down in values. They were doing foreclosing on property. They had a lot of real estate owned properties, REOs, and Private Bank of Buckhead wasn't plagued with all of that, real estate heavy, because we had only been in business for about a year. So that really allowed us to cherry pick great clients, those who were bankable at the time. And as a result, we've really had a good, strong foundation for growth. And, the 7 year mark is truly indication of the strength of the bank.
Because Jim can probably attest to this. I think that's a pretty common knowledge that typically a lot of business, 80% fail within the first 3 years, I believe is the statistic. So with a bank, their magic number, I guess, is the 7 year mark. So congratulations on that, first of all. And so now a lot of businesses have the secret sauce or secret ingredient. So what do you see in terms of Private Bank of meeting the demands of the niche that y'all have chosen?
Well, along with the name, the Private Bank, we provide a very high level of service. And so the special sauce relates around the people of the bank. And Private Bank of Buckhead is the third bank I've been with, and by far, it's very clear that the people at the Private Bank of Buckhead are extremely high quality and really care about what they do, whether it's the teller all the way through the CEO. The way people's philosophies are throughout the bank are just very highly service oriented.
Well, a lot of times you read that in a brochure, what have you, right? But I just have to, again, speak from personal experience. When I walked in the bank, opened the account, not only were you there, but I was greeted by everybody in the bank. I mean, the president, CEO came down. I mean, it's like I felt like I was some, a hotshot VIP or whatever. So, I mean, I was definitely impressed with the experience, for sure.
Well, I know the CEO there, Charlie Crawford, yeah. Right? And, he won actually one of the Georgia businesses of the year last year from the Metro Atlanta Chamber. I was one of the judges that awarded that for him. We were all very impressed with what the bank has done. And I grew up in Buckhead, so I know a lot of his clients, and he and I talked about that. They are doing some really different things there. And, in particular, the people who live in Buckhead, it's a different demographic than any of the other banking customers you would have. Fine. Those are the type of people that don't want to pump their own gas, that right. Kind of thing.
And I don't think there's any gas stations in Buckhead anyway, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Well, there's that one Exxon.
There's that one, yeah, or the BP or whatever, yeah.
And interestingly, he lives just down the street on West Paces Ferry, right across from the governor's mansion. The man who owns that Exxon, by the way, does a very
good— We don't want to get political here, yeah, or anything, Jim. Be careful, yeah.
Does a very good job. But Buckhead Bank really is reaching out and finding all sorts of new niches and all sorts of great, great, great clients. Let me ask you this. Do you find that your background in construction and real estate helps you with so much of the construction and real estate needs of your clients?
Without a doubt. you know, I can speak with a client intelligently about construction, whether it's the footings or the masonry or, you know, the framing components or the inspectors or the permitting processes or zoning. You know, I can go on and on with our clients. Our clients are both the owners of the properties and the general contractors. And I've also been a small business owner. So coupling my experience in real estate and having a general contractor's license in residential and light commercial contracting, coupled with running a small business for 5 years, you know, gives me an advantage to other lenders in the state who, you know, have never run a small business or who have never built a house, for example.
I think Mike and Billy are talking about switching their banks right now, whatever you have.
Reed, do you offer all of the normal banking services like mortgages and all of that kind of thing, or does your clientele demand a different basket of goods?
Well, we really like to talk about the total banking experience, and total banking experience is anywhere from the personal checking accounts to the business checking accounts to the safety deposit box to the mortgage banking, and then also including SBA lending. So we really like to offer a complete package of banking services. A lot of people have, you know, their personal accounts here, their business accounts there, a mortgage. They shop their mortgage. You know, they look for the lowest rate or something like that. Well, a lot of times having one single bank is a huge advantage. And oftentimes, if you have individual components, the total cost of those banking services is a lot, oftentimes higher than if you just have one bank for everything.
And what about the name Bank of Buckhead, Private Bank of Buckhead? Are you, I think you've already expanded into other regions here in the Atlanta area. What are your plans and how does the name limit or enhance your expansion?
Private Bank of Buckhead is really a indication of a team that has been set up in Buckhead to serve the needs of the people in Buckhead and Metro Atlanta and really nationwide. In today's banking environment, the requirement for an actual branch location is a lot less than it has been in the past. One of the components that we really thrive on in our marketplace is the advancement of banking technology, and we're always on the cutting edge in delivering that technology to our clients. So whether it's a banking application that a client can use on their cell phone or a remote deposit machine that they can use from their office to deposit checks, the requirement for somebody to actually go to a bank is a lot less. So, you know, we can either go and visit you or you can find us through technology. We've got cutting edge technology products throughout the board. So really, unless you're a restaurant or a construction business paying their employees in cash, you really don't need a branch these days. So we've got clients anywhere from, of course, in Buckhead to California. And in addition to the Buckhead location, we also have a location in Decatur. In October was our 1 year anniversary of having the Private Bank of Decatur.
And they just got 6 more years left and then they're good, right?
They fall under our charter.
So okay, good.
They,
good, yeah.
They automatically, they're grandfathered.
Grandfathered in. Nice.
Yeah.
Where is that in Decatur?
It's right on the square. It's okay. Right off of the square. It's a great location. And we found an opportunity to get an entire team of bankers in Decatur. So we saw that as an opportunity to provide the same level of high service to
that community as well.
Exactly.
Nice. Yep. All right. So, Reed, how would our listeners best get in touch with you, check out your services or get in touch with you?
Check out privatebankofbuckhead.com or you can call me on my office line at 404-264-7951.
Okay. And you have online banking. You have that smartphone devices, on the smartphone, can you capture an image of cash and make that deposit? I've always wondered if that's going to be possible.
Right? Maybe one day there will be a deposit slip into the phone.
Yeah, nice. Thanks again for being here. Appreciate your time. And thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. So up next, Jim.
Yes.
You had a thought. It's like you had you were pausing there for a thought.
No, I was excited to introduce Mary Marshall to everybody. May I go ahead and do that?
Absolutely.
Go for it. Now the time for that, Rich. Yeah. Well, Mary Marshall is the author of Putting Together the Entrepreneurial Puzzle, the 10 pieces every business needs to succeed. It was just published by Veritas Press, one of the better houses out there. She has also been nominated for one of the Small Business Administration Business of the Year awards, an incredible honor, and her company, Marshall Advisors, is on all of the various platforms. You can find her at mary-marshall.com. Mary, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Tell us about your book, Putting Together the Entrepreneurial Puzzle. I thought there were more pieces than 10, just coincidentally.
I see a follow-up series happening here.
There are more pieces than 10, but the 10 that I started with were what I saw in working with entrepreneurs over the years. I started working with entrepreneurs in the early 2000s as a coach. I was a chair for Vistage, so I ran CEO groups. And as I went in to do the coaching, I found that they had the same questions and the same issues. And I would recommend a book or they'd talk to one of the other CEOs in the peer groups. And over the years, the same things kept coming up. And when I go into the offices, I'd see literally, you know, stacks of books on their desk that were not read. And they said they had the same thing on their nightstand. And I thought, well, this is kind of silly. We really need to do something about this. So I got the idea. Because my son was doing Eagle Scout, and I thought, well, this would be great merit badges or something like that. So that was my original idea. So fast forward, I narrowed it down to 10 things. Very easy to read, very short, and you can either read a couple chapters or read the whole book. But the whole book can be done in a plane ride, which what I found with busy executives, that's about as much attention as they were going to give to a book.
Can you give us some of the 10 pieces so we can get a better feeling for it?
Yeah, the first one is intentional purpose. And by purpose, I mean mission, vision, values. I mean, what do you stand for? Like you, I'm passionate about entrepreneurs. I don't particularly care what their business is. Again, as long as it's legal and moral and all that kind of good
stuff. Legal and moral. Okay. Mostly. Don't forget
okay.
that.
Well, in business, there's another rule. To be ethical whenever it works for you.
Yes, yeah. Right. Mostly.
Yeah. And I just love working
with... Reed would disagree with everything we're saying when being in the banking business. But yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Just close your ears, Reed. But entrepreneurs, I mean, bottom line, we're unemployable. So it's great that we have an avenue to have our own businesses. And quite frankly, it's the backbone of America. I mean, they're what creates the majority of the jobs and we're more fun. So the first chapter, purpose, decide what that is. And then the second one is culture. And the first two chapters really go together because I find that if you don't intentionally create a culture that you want that's going to drive your business forward, it will get created for you. And oftentimes it's not what you wanted. So I'd go into these businesses and the CEO would tell me what his business is all about and what he stands for. And I'm looking around the company going, I don't think so. I think we got a little problem here. So it's all about creating that intentional culture. Then we have role of the CEO, HR, hiring, marketing, sales, finance, operation, and then the last one, exit strategy.
You did that without looking at any notes, almost like you've written the book, whatever. Yeah, exit strategy. I mean, Jim, you can probably speak to this as well, but from what I know from my end of the microphone here is that it's almost not necessarily the first chapter, but you know, starting a business, you need to have an exit strategy from the,
absolutely
right out of the gate.
Begin
right?
with the end in mind, because here's what happens. You know, you'll start a business, you'll be having fun. Somebody will come along and make you this awesome offer for the business. I want to buy it from you. And I've seen so many times when, you know, the entrepreneur says, no, I'm not ready. And they'll pass up all these great offers that aren't going to come back because they have no idea what they're going to do when it's done. So
that's the story. What was the pitch to Google for what was the shopping deal? The Groupon. They offered what, $6 billion
right.
with a B, and they're like, "No, we're gonna hold out. We're good or whatever." Because they were probably so excited and passionate about what they were doing, and now it was worth pennies on the dollar kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And that happens in small business all the time.
Now, as a business coach, what's the most common, you know, errors that you see, in your practices?
Well, the two things that I see most often, that businesses have trouble with A is the money side of things, either not having enough money or wasting money on areas that they shouldn't be spending money on, not being really clear about the ROI. Like I noticed you guys have a very clear ROI for your business. And then the second one is the people. Typically when you interview somebody, it's sometimes the best you're ever going to see them. and entrepreneurs are very easy on individuals. They want to see the best in somebody. And so they believe that. And they don't really think that the person that shows up, you know, a week or two after they've hired him is the same person that they originally hired, because they hire them for skills and then they end up firing them for who they are.
Yeah. One of my big things that I did, Mary, was one of the first hires I did was an HR person, so that I could take that out of my plate. Because, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, Mary. I'm probably stereotypical. I'll hire the first person that walks through the door. Mm-hmm. Literally, the first one who walks through the door that's remotely competent, well, you're hired because I'm busy. I'm going to go back to, you know, here, just start doing it. First thing I recommend is hire someone else to hire for you, because boy, do you make some stupid mistakes as entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Well, and that's a terrific point too, because the role of the CEO should be to identify what you do and don't do well. And typically hiring is not a sweet spot for most people. So hiring somebody to do that is a very good move.
Well, it gives you a buffer as well, whatever, right? So mm-hmm. if things aren't working out, hey, you know, I loved having you around here, but the HR people just not,
pass the buck.
It's not a fit. Exactly. Yeah. That's another rule of business. So, this idea of you begin your book with intention, tell us a little bit more about the importance of that.
Yeah. A lot of times entrepreneurs just get started because somebody gave them a business idea, or they got a business, or something happened and they're accidentally in business. And so if they want to keep accidentally moving forward, that's exactly how it'll go. However, if you decide that you're intentional, this is what I want to create, this is what I want to do, here's my values, here's where I'm going to be in 5 years. And all that may change down the road, but at least if you have that intention starting out, the likelihood of getting there is much greater.
And of all the pieces to this puzzle, I'm sure there will be a follow-up to this, but you know, what do you feel is the most important to resolve?
Well, I would say that the first two chapters are really the most important for the CEO or the owner entrepreneur, and then certainly chapter three, which is their role. But the intentional purpose attached to the intentional culture. So deciding on what your values are, what you really stand for, you know, and how you're going to go about doing this business, whatever product or service it might be, will make it much easier to succeed down the road.
And a little bit of a backstory is, we had not met until this morning in the green room, right? But, you were connected through your PR agent in, Austin, Texas, right?
Yes.
And then, you're in what, the Washington area?
I'm from Seattle.
Seattle. So the guys here, Billy and Mike, win the closest, contest, and you win the furthest to the studio. So now what brings you here to Atlanta? I assume there's a conference here?
I teach a class for the Small Business Administration for entrepreneurs. And once a year we have to go for training. And so it's in Atlanta this year, which I've been here quite a bit, actually through Vistage when I was with Vistage, because there's a robust peer community here as well. So I'm training for that course, and that starts in April.
Now, you know, you're talking about small businesses, and this isn't really, it's a little off topic, but it could be on topic. I'll let you all decide. But, Jim's very, very entrenched in the small business, but school for startups. Mm-hmm. And do you deal much with, startups, or are these mostly existing businesses? And,
Yeah, most of my work has been with businesses that are already started or existed, and where they hit sort of a rock and couldn't get growing again, or in some cases startups. But I'm actually familiar with Jim's work, so he does awesome stuff, and some of the stuff in the book certainly applies to startups. Is certainly, you know, the first couple of chapters, but primarily it's for businesses that are already going.
How many times here in Atlanta?
I have been here probably 10 times.
So you're familiar with Buckhead and the ATV, Atlanta Tech Village, and all the stuff going on at Georgia Tech. And so, you know, we're giving Seattle a run for their money. We're trying to, what, Silicon of the Southeast. So take that back to Seattle. Let them know. Yeah.
Yeah, but we did win the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah. And so, Barry, appreciate you being here this morning. So, we received a copy of your book here in the studio. We just have the one copy, so all of us will share. I got it on Tuesdays. You guys can have it on Wednesdays or whatever. So thanks for bringing that out. I look forward to reading and getting back in touch with you. So how are our listeners, what's the best way to reach out and get in touch with you?
My website is probably the best, mary-marshall.com. All my contact information is there.
Cool. So, Jim, any, closing thoughts here?
No, great show, Rich. Thanks for having all of us. And I'm excited to get to know everyone else here. Yeah, that's the beauty of Business Radio X, that the networking amongst the guests is so valuable. I think that all of us have something in mind that we could help each other with. So that's what I love about, BRX.
Appreciate that. Yeah. So, once again, appreciate everyone being here this morning. Hope you enjoyed it, and, look forward to seeing you next time. And, this is Rich Casanova once again for Business Buckhead Radio X. We'll see you next Tuesday. Have a great week. Make it a successful week.